Starbuck. I didn't need correcting.
Shut up!
Order!
Order! Let's start off as we need to go on.
We can see a better future.
So it's not a competition who can shout the loudest.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wingers podcast. I'm Ross.
I'm Brandon.
And I'm Kathleen. We're back today with another episode of Whinge With Us, a series for getting to know us a little better as we discuss all things news and politics.
And we thought it was all said and done. But no. We started recording on Sunday and then on Monday morning we were hit. Twitter became alight. Sienna Rogers got out of bed and did a bit of work, and we found out that there was a shadow cabinet reshuffle.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
It was us and Angela Rayner probably found out at the same time, to be fair. but essentially, we're recording this emergency part of the podcast on Monday night because we always bring you the most up-to-date and freshest content. So we've got in front of us now, as of 10 p.m. on Monday night. So if anything changes, we'll cover it next week in next week's episode. But a lot has happened. Brandon, could you summarise some of it for us?
Yes, I can try to. So there's a lot of big hitters added to the cabinet that I didn't necessarily expect to be experiencing promotions to the shadow cabinet. There were a few people who were demoted, but they're not necessarily traditional demotions in that I think maybe the roles are better fit for those individuals. It's quite a significant reshuffle, actually, for kind of this stage in a term, I think, and it came out of nowhere, really. As you said, not even Angela seemed to be expecting it today, which is kind of one of the things that I'd quite like to talk about. For me, the reshuffle exemplified the internal divisions of the Labour Party. Mm-hmm. I understand that, for example, under Corbyn, he took part in reshuffles without telling Tom Watson, but I thought that we'd kind of moved away from that kind of adversarial politics almost. Maybe I'm a bit too optimistic, and it came as quite a disappointment that the announcement of these new positions came when it did.
I think it's an interesting time to have done it just before Christmas. No major elections till May next year. I think next year they might be looking at a Conservative internal election for their leader after Peppa Pig Gate, which you can hear about later in this episode, which we cover, which is what happened over the weekend. The bottom line is Boris Johnson went to Peppa Pig World and then told everyone about it. And I think this is a really interesting reshuffle to have done at this time. Big elections next year in May and big elections, possibly a general in 2 years' time. So enough time for these people to grow into their roles. One thing I really want to highlight is Nandi to shadow Gove's role in levelling up and housing and local communities, which is uber important. Housing, of course, a major issue at the minute that the Conservatives are not dealing with. Communities and levelling up, essentially, how we're going to keep the red wall or how we're going to lose the red wall, and the battle between those, you know, 50 or so seats up in the north and in the Midlands that will make up whoever wins the next government next time.
Well, you know,
I'll be interested to see how she does. I'll be interested to see how she does in that role, and I honestly wish her the best of luck.
It's quite interesting that traditionally that would be seen as a demotion moving from shadow foreign secretary to shadow housing and communities. But actually, for me, I thought, and I think I mentioned this in an old episode, that by putting Lisa Nandi in kind of foreign affairs, Keir Starmer was trying to constrain her ambitions and the kind of things that she was passionate. I know that obviously she does have an interest in international relations, but I don't think to the extent at which she has a passion about local government and communities. I feel like that's a role that she's really going to thrive in, and I can't wait to see what she does with that.
Yeah, I don't think she did the job badly for shadow foreign, but I think she'll do better. I think she'll do great up against Gove. I think she's exactly what we need against a man like him. And we didn't mention Lammy's gone into foreign, Commonwealth and Development, which is a mega role for him. Mm-hmm. That's a sink or swim role for him. I think he'll do well in it. I think he's smart enough to do well in it. It's a good legal background, great mind. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll do really well in that role. But make no mistake about it, that is a tough brief.
Oh yeah, 100%. But to be fair, I have faith in him, and I think that he's going to smash it. I think, actually, one of the things I had to say about this shadow cabinet as it now stands as of 10 o'clock on Monday night is that Keir has really surrounded himself with, whether I agree with the people or not, he's surrounded himself with a lot of big hitters. Mm. And he in himself is not that big of a character. He doesn't give me the impression of being too domineering of a leader, to say the least.
Too extroverted, yeah.
Too extroverted. So I kind of see that as almost mirroring kind of the leadership style of Harold Wilson, and how Wilson seemed to surround himself with big hitters and kind of just ask us, kind of act as a mediator between all of these big opinions and big characters. And I'm interested to see how that dynamic's actually going to play out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, interesting also, Yvette Cooper to Home. So she's gone off the select committee. Honestly, I don't know if it's a demotion, but I think she was really good on the select committees. I think she did that job really well. And she can't do that now because she's Shadow Home. And she's, of course, she's done the role before. She's, you know, huge knowledge, fantastic. I think she'll do really well in it. I wouldn't for a second say otherwise. But she's leaving behind a really, really fascinating brief. And I don't know what that process was to get her involved in that, but I think they could have found somebody else. I'm quite happy. I'm not happy that Nick Thomas Simmons has gone, but I can't tell you, I don't know really know what he's done in the past couple of months. That is a proper standout piece of work. I mean, you know, he'll come back. He's very talented. I think him and Keir are on very good terms. So I think there's definitely a role for him in the future. I'm just fascinated to see now Lammy, Cooper, Reeves, and then of course, a friend of the show, Wes Streeting. Wes, if you're listening, congratulations. Great role. We're sure you'll do very, very well. If you want to listen to more about what Wes has done in his life, what he thinks about Labour, you can hop back a couple of episodes. We interviewed him only a few months ago, just a week before conference. So, you know, really fresh, a fresh interview. And you hear a lot about his plans for especially young people. And that energy, I think he'll bring to this new role. And God, with this Omicron new variant, I think he's got a lot of work on his hands. It's a good team. I'm sure he'll do really well.
He's had a really quick career progression, because not that long ago he was a junior minister, and now all of a sudden he's been thrown into this massive shadow brief. And I'm really intrigued to see how he deals with it, because it is a lot to take on. Another person who's been promoted and somebody who's come off the back of a demotion is Bridget Phillipson. And somebody that Matt Zarb-Cousin actually talked about in our last episode,
who he saw as a rising star. You just get the best content. We've properly set ourselves up. None of us realised, just for the record, none of us, I knew on Sunday night that something might be happening today or tomorrow. We've got content 3 or 4 months back. There's none of us predicted what was going to happen. But I have to say, we've called it quite well enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, we've had quite a lot of the big names, if not on the podcast, discussed.
Like, yeah. I'm sure there's no doubt about it. Next year, we're going to have some fantastic names on. We're already doing so much work with people. We can't tell you about it yet, but it's coming and it's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be pretty good. So what are your kind of big first thoughts, Brandon?
Well, one thing that I have recognised about this shadow cabinet is that it is taking quite a significant leap to the right of the Labour Party. So you've seen a lot of those soft left figures, which I thought kind of diluted the potential right wing influence on Keir, either not necessarily taken out of the shadow cabinet, but they've been pushed back to traditionally lesser roles. So Nandi, we're saying that role, local government and communities, is great for her, but it is a step back in traditional senses. Same with Ed Miliband. He's had the business element of his brief kind of taken out, and he's now just looking at climate change. And
surrounding his work on COP, I don't think that's actually...
Yeah, again, it's not a bad brief.
I'm not surprised. I don't think that's a bad move for him, actually, to be fair. I don't think it's a bad move. I don't think it's a bad move at all. I think he'll do better, because that's where his interests, I think, naturally sit. And who's in business now?
It's Jonathan Reynolds,
I believe. Reynolds would be really good. So yeah. I think Reynolds is really good. A Manchester guy, really smart, quite talented. He did DWP for a period of time, so he does understand business. I think that's a good move for him. He does sit, I guess, soft left-ish. It was definitely, this reshuffle was not an elimination of the soft left, but there definitely were some soft left characters moved out. But they're still, you know, Thornbury is one, Nandy is one, Reynolds is one, Miliband's one. There still are soft left people in there. Lammy, I don't know exactly where he lies. I think, same with Wes, I think on some issues he's quite right, on some issues he's quite centre. So I don't think it's a... I think a lot of the headlines this week will be like, purge of the left.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that.
I would argue that it's pretty obvious that there's no hard left figures left.
That's the end of that, yeah.
In the shadow cabinet. It's a stark break from the recent past of the Labour Party in that, for example, Kat Smith left. Also, a friend of our podcast, we've had her on. If you want to listen to what she had to say about why she came into politics, we'll have the link of that episode in this episode description. It was an incredibly interesting conversation to have with her. Mm-hmm. But I get the impression from the resignation letter that it was almost like a resignation before being pushed. So it seemed kind of, a lot of the issues which she talks about in that letter are almost like retrospective and not, I would argue, quite hot political issues.
Yeah, I read that letter this morning and look, like, my honest opinion is politics is a blood sport, such a tough game. But when you are moved, the, in my opinion, respectful thing to do is to write a letter where maybe you have to cover your feelings a little bit, but you just have to say, thank you so much. I'll be moving on. I wish everybody all the best. Mm. And that, you know, we've all worked with bad bosses, irrelevant to politics. We've all had it, and we've all had to write resignation letters where we wanted to tell people what we actually thought of them, but have restrained ourselves. I think that was an opportunity for her to have done that. And I don't think she did that. And I kind of read it and I just thought, a little bit unnecessary. And I think she might regret that in the next few years. But then a part of me also thought, maybe she's been looking to move left for a very long time. And she is somebody... Now, you know, obviously after conference, there was a resignation there from the shadow cabinet. She was the last proper, I really open quotation marks and say proper lefty, because I wouldn't want to classify people as that. And I don't think that's really the case for her. But, you know, if you disagree with me, left wingers, go back and listen and let us know. Go back to listen to our episode where we go through all about her life, all about her brief, where she sits politically. You know, disagree with me if you want. Absolutely fine. But Is she somebody now that's going to go into that left? Is she going to go into momentum? Is she going to move towards the hard left and come out in a leadership role there for a future in the for something to happen to her in the future? Maybe.
I'm really intrigued as to what the
hard left. She's quite senior on the left now.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, I'm intrigued as to where the kind of momentum left see their future.
Yeah.
As in the Labour Party. So I actually don't know what
they've
their
lost
next
all
steps
representation.
Are.
In my opinion now, momentum, the left, the hard left. I wouldn't say the left, I'd say the hard left have lost all representation in the shadow cabinet. I think they lost it months ago, and I think Kat Smith today, final nail. That is it. Like they are out now. And that's a strategy for them. No doubt about it. You know, my phone's been binging all day, people chatting. I have to tell you this morning, one of us put in the group chat, like, reshuffle expected, and like the chat came alive with like, oh, who's doing this? Who's doing that? What have you heard? Who have you heard? Someone on Twitter said this, someone's predicting this, somebody's walked in this building, somebody's walked out this building, somebody's getting coffee. You know, all that stuff happens. I'd be fascinated to see what's going on in the Momentum group chats this evening and what do they see as their strategy for the next year, 2 years. How do they fit into that now, considering that they have, in my opinion, no true allies in the shadow cabinet? So I think we should probably let them listen to the rest of the episode.
Yeah, so you're going to hear me say, and let's jump straight into the episode. But obviously you've listened to us already for a solid...
And I really hope we don't have to come back on Tuesday, because there's been another reshuffle. I don't think we're going to be able
Please,
to.
Please, no, it's going to make...
Yeah, just a little note. Look, I know, Keir, you're busy. You're all busy. But come on, you just got to let the left wingers know so we can organise our recordings around your reshuffles. Come on, we don't want to be left on the hop.
Okay, so we're going to jump straight into it, really. And because we are... releasing this episode on December the 1st. This is the holiday season and Christmas is coming up. I really apologize for people who might go back and listen to our old episodes, because if you're listening to this in January, like, that is a pretty sad time to be talking about this. But we're going to kick right off with our warm-up question. And I want to know, what is on both of your Christmas lists?
Well, see, I'm really unprepared. I've not bought anything for anybody else yet, nor do I know what I want myself. But I'm just going to go really basic and say I'd like a Labour government, because I'm basic.
Classic answer. Enough. You know, I've actually been surprised by how expensive everything is this year. My Christmas card budget is insane. Like, it's just unnecessary. I don't know whether... I mean, there's obviously inflation across the economy, to take a serious spin on it. But I just feel like Christmas is a really expensive time, and it's like it's a lot to deal with for like a day in reality. What are you thinking about, Kathleen?
Well, Brandon, all I want for Christmas this year is world peace.
I swear to God.
Thank you.
Right, okay, both your answers are really nice. Okay,
I thought that was good. I thought you'd like that. That was like what is it, Legally Blonde? No, it's like another cringe film where it's like all I want is world peace. No, but realistically, I really like a pair of trainers, like a really nice pair of trainers, so hopefully Santa will bring me this year, because I bought a pair of trainers last year and I've just worn them almost every day. I've completely run them down to the extent where there's now like a little hole poking out the back in one of them. So a new pair of trainers would be really useful.
I'm actually going to join you in that. I do this really annoying thing where I only wear white shoes. So within about 3 months, they're absolutely wrecked. So I've got two pair of white shoes that are both destroyed.
Nice.
So I need a new pair of white trainers for Christmas.
But white trainers, like, they just get completely destroyed though, don't they? Unless you really look after them.
Yeah, but they look nice, so it's, you know.
Brandon, what do you want for Christmas?
I'm after candles. I'm a big lover of candles. I'm surrounded by them. It's like I'm my own little shrine. That's what it's like.
the Nandi shrine in the corner.
The Nandi shrine in the corner. And I would also... Sorry, that tickled you.
Say a prayer for Lisa, guys. It's a tough season.
my room currently smells like black cherry at the moment. I'm really loving the vibe that's giving off. It's quite Christmassy, and I'd really like some whiskey as well, so that I can forget the holidays. So that sounds so sad. I actually love Christmas. We were discussing this on the I think it was an episode that came out between Halloween and Bonfire Night. And how I was so excited to put on my Christmas playlist. And you know what? I'm loving it.
I'm going to actually have to find something to do over Christmas, because I somehow managed to wrangle like 3 weeks off work.
Very nice.
Yeah, I have no idea how it happened. I was expecting like 3 days, but I got 3 weeks or so. And I have nothing to do. So
I wish I was in that boat. I work at my local arena. And around Christmas time, we are
busy.
Stupidly busy. And I think, yeah, I love Disney films. I love Disney vibes. But I think I will begin to hate it after working so many shifts of Disney on Ice. I'm dreading it, like the long days. But you know what? I'm going to put on a smiley face and make it all Christmassy. And we'll stick on some tunes and it'll be all right. We'll get through it.
I'm very excited. So I've been invited to like 2 or 3... like Christmas carol concerts where you can just go and have a bit of sing-along. And I'm very excited.
So, talking of Christmas, it appears to be the season of strikes. Just to put a dampener on the Christmas spirit, we've got, across the country, a lot of fairly major strikes happening, because I would say that it's kind of a culmination of the past 11 years of wages stalling and workers' rights being rolled back, and really we're seeing the effects of it now. Just before Christmas, when people are, you know, they're busy, they're trying to get around, we've got the end of term exams and everything, so it's kind of the perfect time to be disruptive and try and achieve the goals of various unions. And actually one of the things which is happening this December, and it's on the day of recording, this is the first day of this strike, the UCU strikes happening. Do you two know anything about the UCU strikes? Have you heard much about them yet?
I haven't really, to be honest, but you're definitely right. This is the season to be striking. So yeah. As listeners, I'm sure, know, I'm a very proud Londoner. And this week, next week, and probably also the week after, we've had several TfL tube strikes as they come back into fruition, and we begin... they begin striking again, which was, it's been interesting because the tube on the whole has worked quite well in the past like 2 years, and now it's just like the first time since 2019 and they're back at it again.
The UCU strikes, I don't know much about. I know that there's also the RMT strikes in London. I've not really paid attention, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess it doesn't really affect me, but, you know, solidarity to the strikers.
Just for a little background for our listeners, so the UCU Higher Education, well, Further and Higher Education Union are going out on strike, and they're out on strike because there's loads of things, really. There's loads of problems with higher education and being a lecturer or a university professor or just a member of teaching staff. There's things like, well, they've had a 20% real terms pay cut over the past 10 years, which significantly decreases their living standards. You know, pennies don't stretch as far as they used to. You've got a lot of gender and ethnicity inequality in education. There's also a disability pay gap. There's contract casualization. So before the pandemic, that was something that they were striking over. They were talking about how teachers can lose their jobs over the summer through contract casualization. They were proved right through the pandemic because in my experience, in my uni, a lot of members of staff got laid off and haven't returned because of the contracts that they were put on before COVID. So, you know, they've got a really strong point there, and we've seen evidence of the kind of the consequences of that. And I think, yeah, it just kind of reflects an overall trend of workers losing rights or experience a decrease in pay across both the public and private sector, but more so the public sector. And I feel like this December, we're going to see a significant kickback from that, from all sorts of directions. And I hope that the strikers get what they want and as quick as possible to avoid disruption.
Wow. Sounds really interesting. Well, all the best to them and anyone else who's out on strike this year. If they have to be out. I always think if you have to be on strike, it means something pretty bad has gone wrong. And it's not usually the fault of the strikers that that's the case.
Well, yeah, exactly. These decisions don't get taken lightly. I feel like some people feel that one day, for example, teachers just wake up and decide that they fancy having a day off. Like, that's the kind of like attitude that I think a lot of the public has towards these things.
It's a no bones day. We're on strike.
Yeah. I don't fancy getting paid today. Like, let's just not teach. When actually there's, you know, explaining it to people, explaining to people the problems and why, you know, these various groups are striking, I think the vast majority of people would be sympathetic to that and get why this course of action has been taken. Because it is a big deal to go on strike. You know, it isn't a decision that gets taken lightly. It's one that takes a long time to actually come to that decision. And then a lot of people, you know, put their wage on the line. They put their jobs on the line long term to actually go out on strike. Transport strikes more generally, we're kind of experiencing the same thing in Yorkshire in terms of there's a lot of bus driver strikes. And again, it's the kind of the same deal there, as in the bus drivers haven't been paid a proper wage for the past 10 plus years. And the strikes represent kind of a tipping point and it boiling over, I think. It's not that these problems haven't existed before. It's just that they've kind of got so bad that now strike action has been seen to be the only way to deal with it.
How long are the strikes on for? Do you know, Brandon?
Bus driver strikes in my region are on for a week. So mm-hmm. You can imagine how disruptive that is going to be. Yeah. But they're striking because they've seen that the outcomes of the strike that they want have been done elsewhere. So it's Stagecoach in particular. And they've seen that Stagecoach and Chesterfield have actually given their bus drivers pay rise. So, you know, if it can be done in the neighbouring region, why can't it be done in South Yorkshire, is their argument.
Yeah. So is it private sector workers then? Or?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It is. So we said that we were going to touch on Boris Johnson's CBI speech. I thought it went really well. Did the rest of you watch it?
Yeah, I thought he absolutely nailed it.
He did, didn't he?
10 out of 10.
Absolute barnstormer. Like,
pretty good. Yeah,
barnstormer,
pretty good.
That's quite good, considering the contents of his speech.
That was good. Well done, Ross.
Well.
I had no words. You know, when I first saw the speech, actually, I didn't realise it was to the CBI. So when I first saw it on Twitter, I was like, oh, it must be some regional press thing. Yeah, it's embarrassing, but, you know, his audience is just the media. That was my first thought when I first saw the video. But then when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, God, that's to the CBI. That's to the height of business in our country, to all of the most important people in business. And this is what he was bringing to that discussion. And I'm just in pain. I'm physically pained by it. It's yeah.
I would say that's probably what, the second most important speech of the year, possibly after conference speeches. And I saw a tweet as it was going on, because I was at work, it sort of flashed up my phone. It was like, that was more painful than Theresa May's, I think it was 2017 conference speech. And I was like, surely not. And then after work, I watched it and I was like, oh my God, that was genuinely terrible. Like,
it was so bad.
And it wasn't in a way that, like, Boris has his act and he gets away with it and some people like it. I don't think that fit in with the act. It literally just looked like he was completely lost. It's how he gets from, like, talking about the environment, economy, and then he ends up at Peppa Pig. And I'm just like, have you seen the clip of him making car noises as well?
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. I just have no words. In fact, you know what? We'll insert the sound of him making a car noise here.
Pace of change is now going to accelerate like a new Tesla. Because I can tell you, as a former motoring correspondent, EVs may not burble like sucking doves, and they may not have that rum, rum, rah, rah that you love, but they have so much torque that they move off the lights faster than a Ferrari.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope that was worth your time. So ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, so I think the problem began in that someone didn't number the pages of his speech. But to be honest, like, that's quite a standard thing to do. So I don't know why that wasn't. I'm a bit baffled as to why that wasn't done, because that's just something that everybody does. If your speech is more than a page and a half, you do, on the whole, need to number it. And he would have practiced it a few times beforehand. And what he probably should have done is given the speech to somebody and have them order it, and then come back on a few minutes later and just read out the speech and just said, I'm really sorry, we've got this in the wrong way and I'm not going to read it out if it doesn't make sense. Because I thought at times he just would read out paragraphs and then realise the paragraph he was reading didn't really make sense with the other paragraph he had read before that. And then he just was like, okay, we're not going to bother with this. We're just going to speak off the cuff. And then that's where Peppa Pig came into Peppa and Co. The family of the pigs really came into their own. I didn't see it going that way. And then I also really enjoyed...
I don't think anybody did, Kathleen.
Kay Burley, like... you always express something with Boris, but even you're like, yeah, no, I didn't... Yeah.
It's like how he... Sorry, it's how he said, like, have any of you been to Peppa Pig World? As if he was, like, talking to, like, a bunch of, like, 12-year-olds. Like,
yeah, it was pretty good.
It was just wild.
Well, hang on a minute. Has anyone here been to Peppa Pig World?
Unfortunately not.
See, I haven't been. Ross?
I can't say I have, unfortunately.
No, so nobody here has been to Peppa Pig World, so we cannot. Yeah. But of course, the first rule of Peppa Pig World is that you are to say Peppa Pig World as much as possible, because that's just basic branding and marketing, isn't it? And you really can't say, like, Peppa Pig Land or, like, anything else, Peppa Pig Park, which arguably would have been better, but whatever. Well, it has to be Peppa Pig World. And in order to talk about Peppa Pig in Peppa Pig World, you must mention Peppa Pig World as much as possible.
Well, the Peppa Pig World... I said that in a really strange way. The Peppa Pig World marketing team put out a statement of thanks for Boris, which I find absolutely hilarious.
Oh, right, that's so highly. It's like the head of marketing at Peppa Pig is just like, had the best, probably the best week in the UK.
Honestly.
That guy's like, he was like, I didn't pay any money. And the guy mentioned my stuff for free.
Well, see, to be fair, I had never heard of Peppa Pig World until Boris Johnson mentioned it.
It's quite a big deal.
And I don't know whether it's good publicity or bad publicity. But
my understanding of Peppa Pig is that Peppa Pig has completely taken over, not over the UK, but America.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the influencers that I follow on Instagram has like a new kid, and the kid is watching Peppa Pig so much that the influencer now complains that the child speaks really good English. But like, not American English, but
that's
like English, like English with an English accent, with a Peppa Pig accent.
Oh.
So I think it's like, you know, it's the new form of soft power, isn't it, really?
Wow. Peppa Pig is leading the way.
Leading the world. Wow. So maybe he was right to... Oh, but did you see the interview with Dominic Raab, like, the next day with Kay Burley?
No, I didn't, no.
So it's like the end of this very serious interview, and then Kay Burley goes, "So, have you ever been to Peppa Pig World?" And Dominic Raab went, "Yeah, I have actually, yeah." And she went, "How did you find it?" And he was like, and he said, "It's a day which I'm never getting back."
Okay, there we go, just balancing it out. Good
publicity. I quite liked it, and I think they just both started laughing, but he was like, but he just like sighed and just went, "It's a day in my life I'll never get back, really, okay?"
Well, you know
and she
what?
Was just like, "Oh, right, okay." It's quite funny.
As a result of that interview, I do think, statistically, I am more likely to visit Peppa Pig World. I feel like if I ever had an excuse to go, I would be more likely to go now. So maybe you know, it did work. What it did have a success in was how it distracted from the day-to-day news. It did a very good job of distracting from the changes to social care, which, you know, the cynic in me would suggest that the reason why that was... I don't think that it was purposeful at all. I think the speech was just a complete, you know, muck-up, terrible... You couldn't actually imagine a worse speech besides maybe Theresa May's coughing one, perhaps. But that was all unintentional, to be fair. But the actual aftermath of that speech, I think, capitalised on quite well to distract from other things that were being discussed before it. And yeah. I feel like this is kind of the prime example of what Boris Johnson does as a leader and as a character. He's very good at distracting people from what actually matters. And again, look, we've dedicated a nice part of this episode to Peppa Pig as a result of Boris Johnson's speech, instead of like other things that we could potentially be talking about.
Well, Brandon, hang on a minute. You know that I've been internally lobbying quite hard to discuss about Peppa Pig World, even before it was mentioned. And we have monthly meetings where we talk about what topics we want to say. And every month this year, I've come up with Peppa Pig World. And both of the guys have said, "No, we're not talking about it." So, you know, that's true. That's actually happened several times. I've said, "Look, we need to talk about..." I know a lot of things are going on in the news right now. Afghanistan, COVID, the Home Office. But what we actually need to talk about is Peppa Pig. And the lads have said no. So I finally got my wish. I'm talking about Peppa Pig.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
I'm overjoyed. Best day ever.
Mentioned some other topics there, Kathleen. And one that I think we should discuss is the changes and reform to social care and how it's funded. Did you see the graph that's been going about, you know, how much... Sort of,
yes.
Like what percentage of your home would be taken off you?
Yeah, you shared it, didn't you, Brandon?
I did. I was really peeved by it. Because it, for me, I expect the government to take money out of the poorest pockets first and then go to business second. Like in general, I expect that to happen. But normally it's done in a lot more of a subtle way than that. And like once you actually look at the figures and how it would affect the lowest incomes wealth, I don't know how you can justify it. I really struggle to see how you can justify a policy like that. I just despair. I despair that they even think that they can try this, and it makes me even more sad that they'll get away with it.
Yeah, I think it's a really big issue which the party should be going on over the next few weeks, and it's probably cynically the voter groups which are going to be affected the most are those who do own their own home, but it's not, you know, they're not wealthy, which is a sort of a certain group that we've sort of struggled with recently, or for quite a while, that is homeowners, but not even, you know, those who are particularly wealthy. So it's something which we can absolutely go on, but it could also be quite beneficial to the party if we do make a really big stand on this.
Do you think that the party has made a decent stand on it yet? Because I'm not sure about that. I haven't seen a lot from the party, to be honest.
I've seen one or two small clips and I'm like...
I understand that, you know, in terms of campaigning, we're probably not their target demographic. So if there's any like Facebook advertisements, we're probably not seeing it. But I don't feel like the party's been shouting about it enough when it is something so scandalous.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also, in my opinion, the beginning of quite severe privatisation.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the bill basically breaks up NHSs into, instead of kind of one, a bigger unit, into smaller units, which can be, which basically people from businesses or people from other organisations can sit in on, sit in and decide, make decisions and steer the journey of that trust. I don't think that's particularly helpful, nor is it, in my opinion, necessary. And I don't necessarily know what could be, what can be done about it until we're at a stage where there's another general election and we can put our opinions forward. But I think maybe flagging it more a little bit now would be helpful. Unfortunately, Jonathan Ashworth, who is the Shadow Health, got COVID 2 days ago. So he's going to be out for the next couple of weeks dealing with that. So hopefully they can maybe put somebody in who's able to go a little bit harder on that if possible.
Maybe a character like Dr. Rosanna. I know that's his mental health brief.
She'd
but I think she'd do a really good job of...
she's a GP, she's a doctor as well. So
she is, of course.
She'd be pretty good at that.
You know, the personal experience aspect of it is a really important part of the debate about public services. And I'm glad that in the Labour Party, we've got a lot of MPs who have worked in public services and currently work, in the case of Dr. Rosanna, to kind of stand up for the people who work in the sector and who have to use those services, because they're certainly lacking that on the other side of the benches. It's just a whole depressing situation. And I think one thing that the Labour government needs to do, the next Labour government needs to do, is we need to try and future-proof some of our public services, because a lot of the changes that were made under New Labour, unfortunately, have been rolled back quite easily. And I feel like that should be our main goal, to say that, you know, we're not going to be in power forever, even if we get in next time, even if we're in for... Oh, please, I'm praying for this. Even if we're in for the same amount of time as New Labour were in last time, how do we make sure that once that period of power ends, our policies don't immediately get revoked or changed up or chipped away at like has happened over the last 10 years? I really do feel like as a country we've regressed.
But I don't think you can do that.
Of course.
I don't think it's legally possible for a government to bind the hands of the next one. I don't think you can legally do it. So any law that is placed can be repealed by a previous government, which is why, despite all of this, for another example, Brexit shenanigans, it will strategically and for the rest of time, as long as Britain is a democracy, it will take one vote in the House of Commons to put us back into the European Union, should they want to do one. Despite the fact that the past, you know, three or four governments have been pro-Brexit and the next five or six governments might also be pro-Brexit, it's the same, it'd be the exact same with this. So you could completely abolish the majority of the NHS and then you could probably, within the next government, begin to rebuild it and then abolish it again. So you can privatise it and nationalise it. I just don't know how you could, unless you were to take the NHS out of political hands and put it into a situation where a government can really mess with it too much, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how you do that.
Yeah, obviously Parliament's sovereign and no parliament can bind the next to its decisions, etc., etc. But what you can do is you can make it politically difficult. So the perfect example is actually the NHS, in that, yes, the NHS has undergone privatisation over several governments, but the idea of the NHS and the basic principle of free at the point of use does still stand at the moment. And that's because, in my opinion, the NHS has very much been future-proofed. You know, it's been, the actual idea of the NHS has been well explained. It's got great branding. It's got a very complicated inner structure, which actually, in my opinion, makes it so that it's harder to mess around with. And I feel like we should do similar things for other public services, because under the next Labour government, I hope that will roll back privatisation of the NHS in terms of what's already happened in the past 10 years. But I think kind of doing the same thing as what we did for the NHS for other public services will ensure that future Conservative governments won't be able to tinker with them as easily, because yeah, the NHS has been a success for that. It's stood for a very long time.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah,
I think there aren't many examples like the NHS, though, is one of those standout things. And it's easy to say you've got to sort of future-proof it in the same way we done with the NHS, but it's actually very difficult to do. I actually can't think of any other examples where we've been successful in doing that.
I'm not saying that, you know, it's an easy thing, but I hope that with politics in general, we have a more long-term look at kind of the future of the country and the future of politics when we're in power next. Because I feel like one of the things which we didn't anticipate during the new Labour years is how it could all very quickly end and the country take a very different direction. And it's kind of being aware that can happen. You know, New Labour wasn't forever. It's now faded, in my opinion, into pretty much irrelevance. I know that's quite a statement. Kathleen just made a face at me. You know, there's no doubt that, you know, the New Labour government did a really good job, but in terms of influencing the current party direction, we're on a very different trajectory, even under Keir Starmer.
Remember, guys, New Labour is for Christmas, not for life.
Literally. Unfortunately, that's all that we've got time for today. We're really grateful that you've stayed and listened to our episode for as long as you have.
If you enjoyed that episode and would like to keep in touch, you can do so on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.
Keep whinging and we'll see you next week.
Forgive me. Forgive me.